Good evening, it is 5 p.m. and this is Today in YGK on CFRC 101.9 FM, broadcasting from Lower Carruthers Hall on Queen's Campus in Kingston, Ontario. Today in YGK is brought to you by CFRC's news collective, Christina Laurie, Jesse Bell, Henry Walker, and Ellie MacArthur. CFRC's news programming is made possible by the generous support of the Community Radio Fund of Canada under the Local Journalism Initiative, Queen's University Career Services, What'll I Wear at 732 Princess Street, and The Screening Room at screeningroomkingston.com. I'm CFRC's broadcast journalist Christina Laurie, and here are your local news headlines. This year's Kingston General Hospital Auxiliary's Teddy Bear campaign has officially kicked off. Since the annual campaign launched in 2004, it has raised more than $500,000, providing funds for new equipment for the pediatric program at Kingston Health Sciences Center. Last year, more than 300 teddy bears were delivered to young patients, and community donations brought the hospital past the midway point of its two-year, $55,000 goal for a point-of-care ultrasound machine. This year's campaign runs until December 23rd, with the goal of crossing the finish line on that two-year commitment. Chelsea Reynolds, president of the KGH Auxiliary, sat down with CFRC to chat about this year's campaign. Well, to start us off, so great to have you back. For folks who aren't familiar, I was wondering if you could give us a refresher on what the KGH Teddy Bear campaign is all about.
So the Teddy Bear campaign is something that we've been running. This is our 22nd year, and it's a fundraiser that we do, the auxiliary runs, to raise funds for pediatric care in our KGH site. The bears are available for sponsorship. It costs $100, and all the funds raised goes for equipment for pediatric units.
Mm-hmm. And this year is the second year fundraising for a point-of-care ultrasound machine in the pediatric unit. I was wondering if you could speak a bit about that goal, where we're at, how far we have to go.
Yeah, so last year we made a two-year commitment, and the cost was $55,000. Last year we raised $28,000, so we just need to get basically the same amount again. And then the ultrasound machine stays on the pediatric units, which makes it easier for the families and the patients in particular, because they don't have to go somewhere. They don't have to be wheeled downstairs. They don't have to go where they're not as comfortable, they're not as familiar, and the families can stay right with them. And for the staff, it's right there on the floor. Hopefully they can get results a little bit quicker. Everyone's just a little more at ease.
Mm-hmm. And you mentioned last time we chatted, you know, that second year, sometimes it's a little harder to get that push.
Yeah.
I was wondering if you could speak to that, give some words of inspiration for the community.
Yeah. So last year when we first started talking about it, it's new and it's exciting and, oh, we have this big goal. Now this year it sort of feels like, okay, well, now we're trying to finish that off. But it's, you know, it's a great goal to think about that being in the hospital and available for use for our staff and for the benefit of our patients.
Mm-hmm. And we're going to get this, again, awesome piece of equipment, but I was wondering if you'd also speak to that immediate impact of, you know, being able to deliver the bears at Christmas time and that kind of aspect of it.
Yeah, so the bears will get delivered, I think it's December 19th, 20th sort of thing. And so that's to any young people who are in the hospital at KGH, at Hotel Dew. We also partner with a hospital and Moose Factory, Winnebago. And so bears are delivered there. And I was actually just approached last week. I was out for a walk and a dad and two daughters came up to me. And 3 years ago, one of the daughters had been in having surgery close to Christmas and she had received a bear. And they recognized me and said, "Are you the teddy bear lady?" And they still remembered that and it had made such an impact on them. And she's doing well, which was lovely. So to hear that 3 years on, and she said, "Thanks again for the bear," it was really, really nice.
Mm-hmm. Yes, people are really making that immediate impact right in our community.
Yes, right? Because, I mean, nobody wants to be in the hospital ever. Nobody wants to be in the hospital at Christmas time, and especially if you're a small person. So to get that bear is just, you know, a little bit of something extra.
Mm-hmm. And for folks who are returning donors or first-time donors, how can they get involved?
The easiest way to donate is through Canada Helps. If you just look up KGH Auxiliary and then the Teddy Bear campaign through there, that's you can direct your funds directly to that. You can also go on the KHSC website and make your way to our page. We have a form. You can fill that out. But Canada Helps is probably the easiest for people this way.
The 2025 Bears will be available for sponsorship until December 23rd and can be purchased by calling 613-549-6666, extension 6352, completing the donation brochure, or by visiting Canada Helps and selecting Teddy Bear Campaign 2025 in the donation details section. Another first-of-its-kind innovation from Kingston Health Sciences Center and Queen's University. A new 3D-printed surgical biopsy tool is changing the way scientists approach glioblastoma, a uniquely difficult-to-study and aggressive form of brain cancer. neurosurgeon scientists and assistant professors Dr. James Persner and Dr. Teresa Persner, along with Queen's Engineering PhD candidate Caitlin Andrews, designed and patented a 3D surgical biopsy capsule, a tool used to take small tissue samples from brain tumors with precision. Published recently in the journal Operative Neurosurgery, this breakthrough has the potential to transform how brain tumors are studied and treated. Potential applications include more targeted radiation treatments, more precise and safer surgical decision-making, and new drug development informed by the most comprehensive molecular profiles of glioblastoma to date. Dr. Teresa Persner and engineering PhD candidate Caitlin Andrews sat down to share more about the development of this innovative tool.
Well, to get started, glioblastoma, it's incredibly complex. I was wondering if you could describe what makes this cancer so uniquely difficult to study.
Yeah, it's a really, of all the cancers that I've tried to study, including pediatric and adult brain cancers, for me, it's by quite a margin the most difficult one to tackle, to even conceive of how we start tackling, let alone to tackle. And there's a few reasons for that. So first of all, it's really heterogeneous. So it's made up of many different types of populations of cells. And unfortunately, we've shown that those different types of cells can actually convert between each other. And so you can think you're trying to find a target that you target with a drug. If that target can change at any time in response to your drug, it makes it very difficult. So that's the first thing. The second thing is that it's already all over the brain at the time of diagnosis. So if you look at an MRI, you see this round, bright circle, which is the tumor. But we know that back, you know, a long time ago, in the early days of neurosurgery, they actually took out the entire half of the brain that had the tumor in it. And it still came back on the other side of the brain. So it means that it's disseminated at diagnosis. And while, you know, there's this protective barrier in the brain called the blood-brain barrier that stops drugs and, you know, and toxins and bad things from getting into the brain. So it's good for your brain health. But when you're trying to get drugs into the brain, it prevents it from getting there. So where that big primary tumor is, that barrier is broken down. But for the rest of the brain, it's still very much intact. And so those are sort of the three reasons why this is just an incredibly difficult cancer to fight.
Mm-hmm. And perhaps this will be more for Caitlin, but I was wondering if you could explain in simple terms what this new 3D printed biopsy capsule is and what kind of impact it's going to have on research and treatment.
Absolutely. So as you said, it's a small 3D printed capsule. And the way it kind of works is that it adapts to the tip of pre-existing surgical suction. And then there's a little piston on the inside. And so when the suction's applied, the piston gets pulled up and that traps a sample of brain in the capsule itself. We can actually correlate our sample locations to the preoperative scans through intraoperative neuronavigation. So we can mark each point where the samples are taken from, and it's fully self-contained. So there's no cross-contamination between the samples at all. There's no risk of it damaging. It holds the integrity of the sample together. And that allows us to have like a very clear picture of that exact precise sample location going forward for research, which anyone who does genomics or transcriptomics research understands is very important. The more information we have and the less risk of contamination, the better our sample quality. And so all these factors together really let us have a very precise view of the different regions of the tumors that we're interested in, which is something that we haven't been able to really do easily with standard technologies. It could be done in not the safest ways, which obviously patient priority is our safety, patient safety is our priority. But it allows us to safely capture all these samples in a quick and efficient way that's not too much of a stress for the surgical team. So always the goal is shortest operation possible with as little risk to the patient as possible.
Mm-hmm. And are you guys already using this in your research right now?
Yeah, so we've used it in two patients so far. In our publication, we had a clinical validation where we used it versus the standard of care in a human glioblastoma tumor. And we've since also used it for other cases, and we're hoping to expand its use through the next year.
Mm-hmm. And I know the process of getting something patented is quite a journey. I was wondering if you could speak a bit to that, how it all kind of began and how your team ended up here where you're now using this in research.
Yeah, I think it is. So device development can be a really long and arduous journey, especially getting it from concept to human. And so we were just very thoughtful from the very beginning on how we developed it, so that we developed it in a way that would ultimately be safe for human use. and acceptable from an ethics perspective. So from the very beginning, when we were designing the capsule itself, we took into account things like, you know, are these FDA approved materials? Are we creating it in a way that is very simple and easy to use with humans? And then when it came to IP, you know, what is the IP landscape? Are there devices out there that are very similar to ours that would preclude us from eventually filing a patent? And so from the very initial design steps, we took into account the eventual commercialization and the human readiness of the materials we were using. And so we got to human use very, very quickly, I think because the end goal was embedded in the very initial design process.
Mm-hmm. And what do you think it means for Kingston Health Sciences Center and Queens to kind of be at the center of this global first innovation?
I think it's great. Yeah. I think Kingston's a small town in a lot of regards, right? And so Queens kind of, you know, it punches above its weight with Queens. And so whenever we can sort of raise a flag and say, hey, we're doing something innovative and novel, it just puts us on the global stage. Yeah. And so I think it's great. And I think that the more innovation we can do, the more, you know, kind of first that we can do, it also creates greater confidence in the patient population that they're going somewhere that has all the technology and all the resources and expertise required to receive, you know, exceptional care. And for me, at the end of the day, I love science. It's, you know, it's one of my favorite parts of my whole job is doing science. But I'm here for the patients, right? And to build that confidence in them and to see their confidence in us in our program from a clinical perspective, but also an innovation perspective, it's very gratifying.
Yeah. And I'm curious, Caitlin, since you're still a student, how does it feel to, you know, have this tool that you worked on being out there?
Yeah, it's definitely been a really interesting experience to be a part of. The tool development all started during my undergrad. I've been at Queens for far too long now. And getting to see it move through the stages at the speed that it did, to now having used in patients it's really been an amazing experience, to be honest. And it's an amazing team to have worked with, everyone from Jamie and Teresa, who are obviously like the spearheads of campaigning for it and helping with its development and providing all the user feedback, to even the other neurosurgeons. So in the early stages, when we were doing preclinical validation, we had the neurosurgery team here compare, as well as grad students, between the standard of care tools and our novel tool using porcine brain as our model. And so getting everybody's actual feedback from not just Jamie and Teresa, but the actual, like every member of the neurosurgery team here, is a really unique opportunity. So it's been super interesting to be a part of, and I'm super grateful for the opportunity to have taken part in it.
Mm-hmm. And moving forward, you're building those partnerships with other hospitals, hoping to get this tool out there. What are your hopes for the next few years in this department?
I mean, so the tool was developed to do science, right? We didn't develop the tool because we just wanted a tool. We wanted a tool so that we could access tissue in a way and with a granularity and precision that wasn't otherwise possible. And so now the next 5 years, part of it will be, you know, if other people want the tool, more than happy to share it. We create it in a way where it's 30 cents a capsule, and we can literally send off an email to another institution. They can print it off. And we actually did that. We tried it with SickKids, and they printed off some of our capsules, right? So it's extremely mobile, and we'd be delighted to share it with anyone. But what I'm really excited about is now the science that will come out of it. So it's kind of a little bit TBD. We'll see what happens, but that it was built to do science, not just to be a tool in itself.
Once again, that was neurosurgeon scientist Dr. Teresa Persner and Queen's Engineering PhD candidate Caitlin Andrews on a new 3D-printed surgical biopsy tool changing the way scientists approach glioblastoma. As Persner and Andrews mentioned, the capsule is already being used in operating rooms at KHSC, making Kingston the only medical center in the world currently using this new tool. As for what comes next, the Kingston team is now building partnerships with other hospitals across Ontario to expand its reach. Work is also underway to build a state-of-the-art tissue bank facility that can store samples from patients across Canada, positioning Kingston as a global hub for brain tumor research. For CFRC News, supported by the Local Journalism Initiative, this has been Christina Laurie.
Thank you, Chris. This is your Queen's Campus News on CFRC's Queen's Campus Beat. I'm Henry Walker. Queen's University is speaking out following the circulation of an offensive Instagram video that surfaced earlier this month. The video, reported to contain transphobic, anti-Semitic, and sexually violent language, appears to have been filmed in Kingston's University District. While the individuals speaking in the video are not believed to be affiliated with Queen's University, the university itself has issued a firm condemnation of the content, calling it deeply disturbing. In its statement, Queen's emphasized its commitment to fostering a safe, inclusive, and respectful campus environment. Students are reminded that resources are available through Campus Wellness Services, the Human Rights and Equity Office, and specialized gender diversity support programs. The university is encouraging anyone affected by the incident to reach out for support or to report concerns through established equity and harassment channels. Looking to the future, Queen's is gearing up for one of its biggest annual outreach events. Booth registration is now open for the Science Rendezvous Kingston 2026, which returns on May 9th. This free, family-friendly science festival brings thousands of visitors to downtown Kingston each spring. It features live demonstrations, interactive experiments, robotics, chemistry shows, and exhibits from Queen's researchers, labs, and student teams. Anyone interested in hosting a booth, whether you're part of a faculty, or a student group, or a community organization, can now register through the Science Rendezvous website. A virtual information session held earlier this month provided guidance for new exhibitors, and recordings are available for those who missed it. Organizers say they expect this year's event to be one of the largest yet. Additionally, the latest edition of the Queen's Alumni Review has just been released, offering a look at some of the major projects and initiatives underway across campus this fall. One highlight is the continued Agnes Etherington Arts Center renovations, part of the long-term Agnes Reimagined project. While the main building remains closed for construction, the Agnes team is running an active program of off-site exhibitions and community events. These are taking place in the Rideau Building and in several partner locations across Kingston. The university also released its draft bicentennial vision, a planning document looking ahead to Queen's 200th anniversary in 2041. The draft outlines priorities including research leadership, community engagement, sustainability, and long-term financial resilience. Feedback from campus consultants will continue to shape the final version before it goes to the Board of Trustees. And as many may recall, Queen's once again marked the National Day of Truth and Reconciliation earlier this fall by pausing academic activities and hosting events focused on Indigenous histories and healing. Restoration work on some of the university's historic structures, including the iconic castle-style building near Summerhill, was also highlighted in the campus update. Thank you for listening. This has been your Queen's Campus Beat.
This is your Environment Canada weather report for the Kingston region. Wednesday, November 26th, warmest day of the week, 10 degrees in the forecast with an 85% chance of precipitation. That rain is going to cool things off quite a bit, however, as we will drop down to zero overnight. Thursday, November 27th, 4 degrees is your high, but it's going to feel much colder, actually feeling closer to minus 4. 65% chance of precipitation, which means we are going to see periods of light snow throughout the day, dropping down to minus 2 overnight, which is going to feel closer to minus 6. Friday, November 28th, 1 is your daytime high with a little bit of sunshine in the forecast, but it's going to be very chilly, feeling closer to minus 7, so bundle up when you're out and about. Saturday, November 29th, high of 0, and it's not going to be as bone-chillingly cold, just a low of minus 2 that will feel like minus 2. Sunday, November 30th, daytime high of 3 degrees, mix of rain and snow in the forecast, dropping down to just below freezing overnight. And then the start of December, Monday, December 1st, daytime high of 5 degrees with a 63% chance of precipitation. This is Jesse Bell with your City of Kingston traffic report for the week. We begin with road closures. Aberdeen Street, William 2 Johnson is closed to accommodate construction activity and staging. Albert Street, Princess to Mac is closed to accommodate construction activity and staging at 484 Albert Street. Berry Street, King to Stewart is closed November 25th to 26th from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. each day for the removal of a large tree. Berry Street, Queen to Colborne, closed for construction at 283 Queen Street. Earl Street, Collingwood to Toronto, closed for sewer separation and road rehabilitation work. Raglan Road, Division 2 Main, closed until November 30th from 7:30 a.m. to 4:30 p.m. each day for gas main installation. Toronto Street, Durham to Park, is closed until November 28th for installation of new water, sanitary, and storm services. And Victoria Street, Union 2 Johnson, is closed for sewer separation and road rehabilitation work. Here are some other delays to be aware of. Bay Ridge Drive, Milford to Henderson, expect delays for the construction of new active transportation infrastructure. Catwoods Drive, Centennial to Gardner's, expect delays for the construction of a new multi-use pathway. Front Road, Sand Bay to Country Club, expect delays for the installation of sanitary and water main. Traffic will be reduced to one lane in each direction. Montreal Street at John Counter, expect delays for upgrades to the intersection, including new lighting, traffic signals, lanes, paving, and signage. Trudell Road, development to Danbury, expect delays while a contractor completes road and sidewalk improvements. And Victoria Street and Earl Street, expect delays while a contractor mobilizes the site to start work on the second phase of reconstruction of sewer, water main, sidewalks, and road.
Hey, this is Ellie MacArthur, an intern from the Queen's Department of History, and you're listening to CFRC 101.9 FM. It's time for our concerts calendar for the week of November 24th to the 30th. Kingston has a stacked week of live music, from cozy vibes to big stages, so let's dive right in. On Wednesday at 5:30 p.m., catch Tyler Brett Forks performing at the Bank Gastro Bar and across the pond, or across the lake, I should say. Hotel Wolf Island starts the evening with DJ Great White from 4 to 7 p.m., followed by their open mic at 7:30 p.m. Also on Wednesday, Wings and Tunes open mic kicks off at the Cove Inn at 5 p.m. And some Kingston favorites, Christopher Jackson at the Creekside Bar and Johnny Kerwin at Timeout Bar, both starting at 6 p.m. On Thursday the 27th, we've got some high energy at the Broom Factory with No Bro and Societal Siege at 7:30 p.m. Meanwhile, at the RCHA, catch Beats Workin' at 7 p.m. and Original Thursdays with Evan Carlson, Ron Steves at the Coven starting at 5 p.m. Emily Trigg is a folk roots musician, and her new album, The Great Escape, just dropped. She is playing at Hotel Wolf Island with John Bora starting at 8:30 p.m. And Timeout Bar has a double bill on Thursday with John McClurg at 4 p.m., followed by Ted Landlone at 7 p.m. Heading into the weekend, on Friday, we've got something for every person and every genre. Starting at the Broom Factory, Charlie Houston's Big After I Die tour is with Last Call and LHRK at 7 p.m. At the RCHA, Kent Nicholson kicks off TGIF Happy Hour at 4 p.m., followed by $5 dates at 8 p.m. Also on Friday, Ontario Festival of Small Halls brings us Ben Kaplan at the Cove Inn starting at 6 p.m. And also at 6 p.m., Scott Owen performs at the Creekside Bar. Another triple bill at the Mansion on Friday with Matt Campbell, Otis Strange, and Lustre at 8 p.m. And also at the Mansion on Friday in the Wine Cellar, catch House in the Mansion Volume 3 starting at 9 p.m. And to round out Friday with some sweet acoustics, we've got Spencer Evans at Timeout Bar starting at 7 p.m., Bon Evans at Tiernan Og at 9 p.m. And if you're after a pre-dinner treat, Chris Morris at the Toucan starts at 5 p.m. Starting off strong on Saturday, November 29th, with Stephen Stanley, No Electric, and Tanya Joy at the Broom Factory starting at 7:30 p.m. This night is all about storytelling with Stanley's nostalgia and thoughtful rock, as well as Joy's soulful folk. Also on Saturday is GovFest featuring Dewey Roadkill, Retirement Plan, Doing Okay, Veritones, Sweet Pea in the Heat, and Lowry at the Buckle from 6 p.m. to midnight. This is a charity event, and the money raised through GovFest Kingston is specifically used to fund the local KFLNA United Way, which supports local community projects and provides support systems for vulnerable community members. In addition, 50% of the proceeds from GovFest are used to fund Ryan's Well Foundation, which works to provide consistent access to safe drinking water in developing regions worldwide. Tickets are $20 advance and $25 at the door. There will also be a silent auction, door prizes, and a raffle from local businesses. So swing by the Buckle from 6 p.m. to midnight on Saturday and support some good music for a good cause. Also on Saturday, the Isabel Voices present a festive celebration at the Isabel Bader Center starting at 2:30 p.m. On Sunday, it's Sunday Fun Day Chicken Pickin' at the Cove Inn from 1 to 4 p.m. And the Queens Dance Club has their mid-year recital at Kingston Grand Theater starting at 6 p.m. Thanks so much for joining me. If you have a concert that you'd like to add to our online and on-air calendar, reach out at cfrc.ca or at cfrcmusic on Instagram using the link in our bio. Hey, you're listening to CFRC 101.9. My name is Ellie MacArthur, an intern from the Queen's Department of History, and it is time for the events calendar for the week of November 24th to the 30th. As the winter creeps in, there's lots of trivia, community events, performances, and holiday programming, so let's jump right in. On Wednesday, catch the book launch and discussion for Social Innovation for Real World Transformation with Chris Mackey, Julie Paquette, and Jonathan Durand Fulco at the Broom Factory starting at 7 p.m. There's also trivia at Daft Brewing starting at 7 p.m. And as always, warm up those vocal cords on Wednesday. We've got karaoke at Jersey Sports Bar starting at 7 p.m., karaoke at Timeout Bar starting at 8 p.m., and the classic karaoke at the Mansion starting at 9 p.m. On Thursday at 6:30 p.m., The Spire hosts Inspired Aging, a Talks with Docs event, which is a thoughtful and informative series about staying healthy and growing older. And for theater lovers, Guys and Dolls hits the stage at La Sesame Theater at 7:30 p.m. If you just didn't get enough of karaoke on Wednesday, don't fret, there's karaoke at Tierna and Og starting at 9 p.m. And if you're trying to work out those brain muscles before the weekend, catch trivia at Riverhead starting at 7 p.m. or trivia at Queen's Pub starting at 9 p.m. Some interesting events moving into Friday. At 5:30, Sutherland Hall hosts the Black Innovation and Tech Futures Forum, a discussion and networking opportunity at the intersection of technology and equity. And if you're seeking some holiday vibes, we have the Baroque Christmas Treats at St. James Anglican Church from 5:15 to 7 p.m. with traditional music in a beautiful setting. And theater fans can once again catch Guys and Dolls at La Sesame Theater at 7:30 p.m. Also on Friday, Ruben in the Dark performs at the Royal Canadian Legion Branch 160 at 7:30 p.m. And finally on Friday, at Wolf Island, the Wolf Island Records Musical Review is at Hotel Wolf Island at 8 p.m. with a showcase of labeled talent. Guys and Dolls continues on Saturday with a 2 p.m. matinee and a 7:30 evening show. At 7:30 p.m., Kingston Grand Theatre presents Barca, a Girovara production, which is an innovative and artistic stage performance. And if you want to participate rather than watch, karaoke at Timeout Bar kicks off at 9 p.m. On Sunday, it is the last chance to catch Guys and Dolls musical at La Sesame Theatre at 2 p.m. There's the Xmas Family Sing-Along at the Spire at 2:30 p.m. This is an all-ages event, so bring your kids and get into the holiday spirit. And finally, as always, wrapping up the week with karaoke at the Toucan starting at 10:30 p.m. Thank you so much for joining me this week. If you have an event that you'd like to add to our online or on-air event calendar, you can reach out today via cfrc.ca or at cfrcmusic on Instagram using the link tree in our bio. Have a good one.
Thank you for tuning in to CFRC's local news programming. To revisit episodes of Today in YGK and hear more from some of our guests, be sure to head to our podcast network at podcast.cfrc.ca. Today in YGK is brought to you by the generous support of the Community Radio Fund of Canada under the Local Journalism Initiative, Queen's University Career Services, What'll I Wear at 732 Princess Street, and The Screening Room at screeningroomkingston.com. Be sure to stay tuned for more CFRC programming coming up next.
What'll I Wear offers the best in vintage, funky, one-of-a-kind treasures, clothing, accessories, and a fabulous selection of jewels, vintage and new. Find the cutest purse, the most dashing of hats and sunglasses, everything to complete your individual look. What'll I Wear has it all. They can dress you from top to bottom. Find your new fashion fave at What'll I Wear at 732 Princess Street in Kingston. Visit their new location and follow them on Facebook to keep up to date with what's in store at What'll I Wear.